Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, here with Jeff Rimbold, my regular partner from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL. And we're going to talk about a pretty crazy week two with some surprising results, which is us getting our early excuses in for a poor week of predictions. But Jeff, it was another one of those weeks that you don't necessarily expect in the NFL. And it was a good leveler because some of the teams that did well in week one fell by the wayside in week two. And those that struggled on opening day got their wins.
Well, you know what? This is today's NFL. And, you know, if it's 10 or 15 years ago, Neil, these kind of weekends were very, very rare in the National Football League where teams would go on the road like the Bears and go into San Francisco, be behind early in the game and come back. And then you saw the game last night with, you know, Philadelphia and Indianapolis. And it just that's the nature of the game today because of the rules changes, because of the open offenses that are in the league now. You know, I think it's great for the fans. It's tough on the prognosticators, but it's great for the fans.
Certainly. I can't even spell prognosticators. You're getting too technical already, Jeff. Showing off. Swallowed a dictionary for your breakfast. What time is it there anyway, by the way?
It is 5 a.m.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I can't hear a coffee machine in the background or anything, so you're going.
No, actually, I'm not. There's no coffee shops open at 5 a.m. So.
Got to make your own.
That's exactly right.
You're slumming it. We're going to talk about what happened in week two. We are going to look ahead to week three in the NFL, make our predictions. We'll take your questions in the mailbag as well. Just a warning, because we want to talk about football, because I think the past week has been very depressing for NFL fans off the field, and rightly so. We're not trying to sweep it under the carpet by any means, but it would be nice to talk some football. So I'm just going to take one question out of the mailbag and then move on. This is from Paul Holland, who says, as a Minnesota Vikings fan, I'm disappointed at the decision to reinstate Adrian Peterson. What are your thoughts? Jeff, I'll take this one and then we'll move on. I'm disappointed as well. I would like to see a stronger stance there, and I'm very, very disappointed in Adrian Peterson as a man. So we'll move on from that, and we'll talk some football. And Jeff, I said we're going to cheer it up and talk football, but boy, what a week for injuries. I mean, we saw some high-profile guys go down, didn't we?
Yeah, you know what? And here's the thing about the injury. As you go through a 16-week schedule, you anticipate that you're going to have, you know, injuries. Injuries are part of the game. Mm. And but boy, what's concerning to me is you see the number of really high, you know, first
stars.
Line players, high level
yeah.
players, stars, if you will, that are getting nicked and going down, and you know, that changes everything in your preparation. That changes everything, you know, in terms of what you can do schematically, and you know, depth is the hardest thing in the National Football and a pro league. Depth is the hardest thing to have because, you know, the way the draft system works, and you know, it's hard to stockpile players at key positions. So, one injury can change the face of a whole season.
I was wondering, Jeff, as I was traveling into record this podcast today, I was thinking about the fact it was a lot of stars, and you know, I'm not going to try and list all of them here now because there were so many, but you know, Jamal Charles went down, Robert Griffin III with the dislocated ankle, AJ Green could be out until week five with a turf toe. And I think we'll always have stars in the NFL. I think there will always be superstar players that we look at, but I wonder if teams, like you say, will always be about that depth and building platoons of wide receivers rather than relying on AJ Green. So we saw Mohamed Sanu step up and make some plays for the Bengals on Sunday. I mean, we are going to have to see that where it's that next man up mentality. I mean, this was a bad week for stars. You don't normally see this many big names go down in one weekend. But I mean, it is going to happen because the Rams are on their third quarterback of the season already, if you count Sam Bradford in the preseason. The Falcons are already breaking in two new offensive tackles. I mean, you have to have that depth.
Yeah, you know what? Here's how you create superstars. They get an opportunity,
right.
And whether that opportunity comes because of an injury, however you get the opportunity, you then are put in a position where you can, you know, become a player, become a star, if you will. You know, we had that same situation on our football team this past weekend. Terrell Sinkfield, a kid that we brought in from the Packers, Brandon Banks. hurt, couldn't play, so he had to go back and return punts for us. Returns a punt 58 yards for a touchdown, and all of a sudden, here he explodes on the scene. So whether it's Mohamed Sanu or any of the young guys, Kurt Warner didn't get his opportunity until Trent Green went down. So the one thing about the injuries is it does give young guys a chance, or you know, recycle players, or however you got your depth, a chance to succeed and a chance to show that they can be legitimate players in the National Football League. So one man's misfortune is often another man's opportunity.
Jeff, just explain to us. I mean, not everyone has the talent of AJ Green or Jamaal Charles, but given the opportunity, do you feel that bottom of the third roster players or bubble guys who might get signed and then have a chance to be thrown into the lineup, do you feel athletically that there's not a massive difference? I mean, because these guys are good enough to have been in NFL camps and that kind of thing.
Well, I think, you know, there's nobody playing in the National Football League that doesn't belong in the National Football League.
Right.
But the reality of it is, when you lose, for example, Atlanta last year, when you lose a Julio Jones, it's hard to replace that skill set. You know, if A.J. Green is out for a long time in Cincinnati, will Sanu be able to sustain a level of play over time as A.J. Green did? That's the biggest question. But for the coaches, and you know, for everybody, and now in their preparation into next week, they may have to readjust some of their thinking so that they can take advantage of the unique skill set that the player that they have on the field does have. And so the really good coaches, the guys that really can, you know, manage a team well over the course of a season, are able to adjust, even if it's just minute adjustments, just be able to adjust schematically what they're doing to suit the talent that's on the field. You lose a great cover corner, well, you may have to play more zone than you did when you had a guy who could just lock down a side for you.
Jeff, when I talk to players, I'm very lucky to go around and interview a lot of players about their careers in the NFL, and when you talk about injuries, and I've talked to players who've come back from serious injuries, and to a man, they say, I hate being a spectator. It's awful. I'm a terrible spectator, but I also don't feel fully part of the team. Now, take us in the locker room. Is that because they just aren't able to contribute on Sundays, or are they actually not in the locker room as much because they're getting treatment? I mean, in your experience, is that true? They don't feel like they're as much of a team player, and do you have to try and keep them in the fold as a coach, I guess?
You know, I'll go all the way back to my playing days. When you're hurt and you're not contributing on the field, there is a void. You know, there's a void, a psychological void that happens, because you're used to being out there with your teammates. You're used to going through the rigors of practice and the excitement of the game and all of that. But when you're standing on the sideline and you're in a jersey that you typically in the National Football League or in pro football, when a player's hurt, he wears a different colored jersey so that the trainers and coaches and everybody know that he shouldn't be in drills. And so, when you have one of those red jerseys on, it's tough, and you don't feel like you're as much a part of the team. Now, actually, that's more psychological than it is anything else. But, for example, you may be in treatment more than you're in meetings, because the important thing is to get your body back and healthy so that you can play again. And you're not as active as a part of what's going on with the game plan, and the anticipation leading up into the game is a little bit different because you're not going to play. So psychologically it is tough on players, and particularly if you're a guy that's had a leadership role on the football team, that leadership role has to be filled by somebody else, and oftentimes for a player that's tough emotionally for him to watch another guy step in and take their job.
What a perfect segue, because I was just going to ask you about Robert Griffin III, because of course one of the highest profile. We said there's so many stars went down this week, but RG3 is one that draws the attention. The dislocated ankle, it looks like it's 8 weeks minimum, still possibly done for the season. There's not a great deal of clarity on that yet, but we know that the ankle isn't broken, but there must be ligament damage in there as well. So Kirk Cousins comes in, leads them to a comfortable win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. People were talking in the preseason about Kirk Cousins playing better than RG3, but we go back to what they invested in Robert Griffin III. This is going to be fascinating to watch in the coming months. And obviously we are, I wanted to see RG3 back to his rookie form. We may not see that this year now.
No, it may not be, and I think it's going to be tough for him, too, because, again, you're talking about a guy that a lot of what he does is dependent upon his legs. Now, he's had two major lower body, actually three if you go back to his college days.
College as well,
Three major lower body injuries in the last 5 years of his career, and that's difficult. And, you know, particularly for a quarterback, that's difficult because, you know, you're everything that you do throwing the football is based upon your ability to set your feet and move your feet, and you throw from your legs, you don't throw from your arm. Mm-hmm. So anytime you have a quarterback who has a lower body injury, that's a tough deal, and especially a guy who relies on his legs and his ability to move and to create in the pocket and all of those things. So I'm sure I'm not anywhere near as frustrated as the Redskins people are with the situation, but certainly for all of us that are NFL fans, he was a dynamic young player, and we're looking forward to seeing him trying to recapture some of that magic, as you say, of his rookie season.
Absolutely. We're going to look back at week two, and we're going to pick out just a few games because there's a few issues around each of the games that we've picked out that I want to dig deeper on. We're not going to try and cover off every game in the NFL. That's not what we try and do here on Inside the Huddle. But Jeff, let's start with San Diego's, well, I think for me it was the performance of the weekend. 30-21, they knock off the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. And the way they did it, first of all, 42 minutes time of possession when it was 119 degrees Fahrenheit on the field. That led to some uncharacteristic missed tackles from the Seahawks. I mean, San Diego just controlled this one.
Well, you know what? I watched the game, and I thought that San Diego approached Seattle in the way that you have to approach them, and that was that they were not going to back down one little bit. Mm. And you know, you look at what they did. They threw the ball. They were physical with them, and you know, they featured the tight end against the matchups against the linebackers. Defensively, I think you can see that San Diego's made real improvement in this off season. Mm. You know, and Pagano has always been a guy that had an awful lot of scheme. I mean, they do some really good things. You could see it last year when we were doing their playoff run. But he just was a little deficient in talent. Now they've brought in better talent. I really think that, you know, we've talked about this a number of times. I think McCoy and those guys in San Diego are doing a phenomenal job of getting that organization headed in the right direction. But the toughness that they exhibited, which has not been a, you know, a San Diego Charger trademark historically, the physical toughness that they just went in and said, okay, come on, let's go. Let's, you know, it's like that old deal. Let's stack the furniture in the middle of the room and let's go. And that's the way they approached it with Seattle. And I think if you're going to beat the Seahawks, you're not going to out-finesse them. You better be able to go in there and be physical with them.
And I thought that physical toughness was evident. You don't control the ball for 42 minutes without that. But they had mental toughness as well. I was watching a lot of this game on Red Zone in the Sky Sports studios on Sunday night, and I saw one play where Phillip Rivers was shoved out of bounds by one of the defensive players. And typical Phillip Rivers, he got up, he was in his face, he was jawing at him, and it was basically, you're not going to intimidate me, I'm not going to be scared of you. And if we extend that out to the way they played, it's not huge numbers, but Phillip Rivers did target Richard Sherman four times, completed all four passes for 56 yards. That's a stark contrast from what the Packers did in week one when they said, we are not going on that side of the field. And Aaron Rodgers, one of the very best in the game, didn't want any piece of Richard Sherman, whether that was him or his play calling. That was the fact. So, you know, there was some mental toughness there, and they weren't going to have their offense curtailed by what Seattle did defensively.
Yeah, and you know what? Rivers really has kind of, you know, got that heart and soul of that team. He is such a competitive guy. And you look at it sometimes, you look at his mechanics and you look at the way he moves around and you say he's on the, you know, he's certainly on the decline in his career. But he still, with that fiery competitive nature that he has the ability to rally his football team, and, you know, obviously has enough arm and enough throw left in him. Mm. But, you know, San Diego did everything right. They, you know, they had the big turnover on special teams that turns into a touchdown. Rivers threw the ball well. Gates looked like he was young again, playing tight end. And like you say, they went after Seattle. They didn't back off. Now, you know, I thought Keenan Allen's, you know, saying that they exposed Richard Sherman in the game was a little bit a little drastic of a comment, but
yeah,
but at least they went after him. They weren't afraid. And I think that speaks to the mentality of your football team. Mm. And again, if you really delve into it and you drill down a little bit, you got to know that during that preparation, during that week, that those coaches, you know, from the head coach all the way through the staff, that they said, hey, wait a second now. We're not going to be bullied. We're not going to be intimidated by, you know, the wolf tickets that Seattle's going to sell when they walk on the field. We're going to go out and we're going to go after everybody on the field, everybody, Sherman included. And, you know, I think when you do that, that brings a confidence and an attitude to your football team that was, you know, evident in San Diego in the game.
Jeff, as a coach, is that approach that you like to adopt and that you would not want to be influenced by another area of the opposition? Or is it too simple to just say, well, we're not going to let them rule what we do? You have to make sure that you can win in those certain areas before you get full of bravado. I mean, or do you like to think, well, we're not going to be influenced by the opposition?
Well, I think if you don't go on the field, this is just a personal thing, but if you don't go on the field every time believing that you can go toe-to-toe and go punch-for-punch with everybody that you play, then you're not going on the field with the proper mindset. And, you know, this is a physical game. Even with all the rules changes and how the game has changed, and, you know, it's now passing first league and all those other things. But the
go on the sidelines and see.
Yeah, the games has not changed, really. You have to win up front. You got to be able to block, and you got to be able to attack the quarterback. And so the big guys, it starts with the big guys, and then it goes throughout your football team. But, you know, for example, for us, one of the things that we always say every week is we want to be more physical than the other team. Mm. Because the reality of the game is still that if you are the most physical football team, then there's no guarantee, but your odds of winning are going to be better. And so I think that that's the way San Diego approached this and said, you know, Seattle takes pride in their ability to be a physical football team. Well, we're going to match them punch for punch, and they did. And they made some great plays. I mean, the catch that Gates made in the end zone. Oh. There's some phenomenal football plays being made. But, again, where do you trace it all back to? You trace it back to the head coach. You trace it back to his message to his football team during the week. And then the guy that, you know, stands there and takes the snaps from the center was – He was ready to play. There was no question. Phillip Rivers had a great game and was emotionally into the game.
Jeff, I'm glad you mentioned the trenches, because I wanted to ask you about two of the Wembley-bound teams. And in two games, so the Atlanta Falcons lost this week to the Cincinnati Bengals. In two games, the Falcons have given up an average of, well, both games exactly 472 yards per game. But I think critically, they haven't had a single sack. They didn't get a single hit on Drew Brees in week one, and they haven't had a sack in two games. The Jacksonville Jaguars lost to the Washington Redskins, as we already mentioned. They gave up 10 sacks and 13 over two games. So I'm not asking you to get into the personnel, because, you know, this could be ever-changing as this podcast is being recorded with the way these teams are playing. But give us a couple of X's and O's things that we might look out for that the Falcons can do to... you know, what are the typical things? If you haven't got a sack in two games, what would you as a coach be looking to do? And if you're giving up 13 in two, is it time to press the panic button? What things do you do there that, even if it's at the most basic level, what do you do to shore things up?
Well, I think, you know, at the most basic level, you look at your personnel, right? And you say, okay, is it a personnel issue? Is it a scheme issue? Right, and now when you say personnel, it's not always just the offensive lineman you're talking about.
Right.
It's the quarterback's ability to see the blitz, know when pressure's coming, who the free guy is he, what his hot reads are, all of those things. The receivers have to be on the same page. The backs and their blitz pickup, all of those things factor into. You know, oftentimes offensive lines take the ridicule for giving up a number of sacks, but it's much more complex than that, because pass protection is based upon, you know, everybody being on the same page. Offensive linemen, running backs, wide receivers, quarterback, everybody. So you got to look at that first. And if it's a personnel issue, how can you hide the personnel, or how can you adjust the protection in such a way that let's say you've got a deficient right guard, that guard doesn't have to block one-on-one during the day? Do you slide the center to him? Do you chip with a back? Do you bring a tight end to that side? And, you know, there's a number of things that's you can do schematically. But again, for every action, there's a reaction. That's the laws of physics, and that same thing is true. If you keep a tight end in, then you've reduced the number of receivers in the route. So you have to be able to balance that all. Typically, when you're having trouble with sacks, it's because you're holding the ball too long, and you're in a lot of second and third and long situations where you have to hold the ball because the routes take longer to develop. So the first most fundamental thing is personnel. The second most fundamental thing is scheme. And then the third most fundamental thing is you got to do better on first down so you can get yourself into second and manageable, which is typically second and five or less. And, you know, they give you the ability to – now the defense just can't pin its ears back and go after the passer. If you're not getting sacks – again, that's another thing where, first of all, you look at the personnel. Are we winning the one-on-one matchups that we're getting in pass rush? Are we good enough? If we're not getting pressure, then with four, then we're going to have to bring additional guys. Now, you look at your corners and your safeties, and you say, can we hold up in man coverage? If not, then you got to get into a zone blitz type of scheme to get extra rushers at the quarterback. You know, that's why the personnel office is so important in every franchise, because, as you know, as we say, the game is won up front. It's different now in this day and age in the National Football League. In the old days, it was you needed those guys that could block on, you know, and get you 4 yards and a cloud of dust in the offense in the running game. Now you better have those dancers. I watched the game last night, and I watched the athleticism of the offensive linemen in the National Football League now is absolutely incredible. I mean, it is amazing how athletic those guys are and how their bodies have changed, because they, especially the tackles.
They move better than the tight ends of 30 years ago, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I mean, it really, truly, truly – the Peters kid from they are amazing athletes out there on the edge, because they're faced with rushers now who are, you know, it used to be a defensive end, if he was 4'8 in the 40, he could run a little bit. Now you got 4'5 and 4'4 guys coming off the corner on you. So, you know, the game has changed, and that's why personnel and the ability to acquire personnel through drafts, through trades, through however you get them, personnel is the most important issue.
And personnel, just flat out personnel, or personnel that fit your scheme?
Well, I think it's got to be personnel that fits your scheme. And then you also can't be hard-headed and recognize that it's not a limitless supply.
Right.
So whatever you have is what you have to coach through. And, you know, again, I think as you watch the really good coaches in the National Football League, the ones that have longevity, the ones that quote get it, if you will, is, you know, they have the combination of both those things. That's what was impressive to me about Philadelphia last night, Neil, is you watch what Chip does with what he has. You know, you saw the emergence of Darren Sproles in the fourth quarter last night, because he put him in a position where Darren Sproles can be the most effective, which is to catch balls out of the backfield, get him in space, and create matchup situations for the defense. So there's a guy who, you know, gets it, who understands how to use his personnel, how to use McCoy, how to use those guys, that the tight ends that he has that are athletic. And also the personnel staff gets what he needs, and they've gone out and acquired that kind of personnel. So, you know, it's not collecting football cards. That's the thing. That's the thing I always say, because
it's collecting,
you know,
chess pieces, isn't it?
I'll be honest with you. If you look at a couple of the franchises in the NFC East, I'm going to tell you something. They're card collectors, and you know, and that's why they've struggled, in my opinion. That's one of the reasons why those two franchises have struggled so mightily in the last 10 years.
I just said it there. I don't know if it's like collecting chess pieces almost. You know, and that's what Chip Kelly, I always feel that's what they're doing for Chip Kelly. Here's another little piece that you can move around and create problems for the defense.
Yeah, and you know what? And everybody gets it at a different level, because obviously the Eagles were a much better football team when Chip Kelly went in there than what Gus Bradley inherited in Jacksonville, right? And so there were a lot better pieces on the table, if you will, in Philadelphia than there were in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So Gus has had to almost completely, you know, wipe off all the checkers on the board and start over. And that takes time. And, you know, you saw the first week some evidence that they're headed in the right direction. Then as typically when you're trying to change a program, they have a dip the second week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, they just have to understand in Jacksonville, and I think he truly gets this, that it's a process, and it's going to be a grind, and we're going to have to go through some really tough times, you know, until we get enough good players and guys that do it the way we want to get it done. The question with all of that is, does the organization have the guts to stand in there with you while you're going through the process? You know, and again, like I say, the teams that go from, you know, pillar to post, as they say, you know, those are the ones that typically can't get better.
Yeah, I mean, he told me it was a process, and it was going to take time, and you can speed that up with the addition of a franchise quarterback. But I think we see there 13 sacks in two games. He's not throwing Blake Bortles into that at the moment. He doesn't want to, you know, have that clock in his quarterback's head speed up because of he's being knocked from pillar to post. And the other thing he talked about is, you know, our team gets it. The Jags know what they need to do to be successful, and they do it occasionally, but they don't do it consistently. And it's that word again, consistency, isn't it, in the NFL?
Boy, I tell you what, that was one of Coach Vermeil's biggest things that he talked about all the time, was consistency of excellence.
Yep.
You have to be consistently well prepared. You have to practice well on a consistent basis. You have to prepare yourself on a consistent basis at a high level, and you have to perform on a consistent basis. And that's what, you know, that takes time. It takes time. And, you know, there's an old saw in the league that it's usually the third year before you start to, if you've taken a program from ground zero like they have in Jacksonville, it's usually the third year before you really start to see evidence of what you've built. And now with free agency and some of those other things, it can happen a little bit faster if you have the money to go out and just do it. But, you know, I just think that that the organizations that will eventually turn a bad situation into a good situation have the ability to, you know, persevere and stay with the plan through the tough times. You know, I'm really interested to see what's going on in Cleveland with Pettine.
Yeah, he I was just going to ask you about them, yeah.
Yeah, he got his first win this past weekend. I think they're doing a little bit the same thing with Manziel. They're not going to put Manziel in situations where, you know, he's thrown in, you know, just for the sake of, okay, here's the savior of the program. Mm. And I think they have a plan, and obviously they've gotten better. They're tougher, which I think is a reflection of Pettine.
But now they need to stick to the plan, Jeff, because
they've
had plans before, and they've gone through coaches, you know, I don't know, so quickly. Rob Chudzinski didn't even last a year, so.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and that's, you know, they've gone through ownership changes and coaching changes and quarterback changes, and, you know, every time you change, it sets you back, and you got to start over. And that's, you know, that's why I say the people that have that shaky hand on the wheel, they're the ones that typically are continually looking for the next best answer.
So the Browns beat the New Orleans Saints 26-24. Billy Cundy for 29-yard field goal to end the game. What a drive at the end. They started on their own 4-yard line against the Saints with the game on the line, and he's throwing passes to, well, it wasn't Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron, the Pro Bowlers from last year. He was hitting Gary Barnidge, the backup tight end. It was Miles Austin. It was Andrew Hawkins. I mean, what a job by Brian Hoyer, Jeff, to start. We'll talk about the Saints and the defense and some of the stuff going on there in a couple of minutes. But first of all, game on the line, your own 4-yard line, a bunch of, I don't want to say journeymen, but by the standards of some of the stars around the NFL, they were.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what they are. You know, Miles Austin is a guy that's flashed in Dallas, but never, you know, within, you know, hamstring
injuries. They didn't want him anymore.
Whatever, they gave up on it. And you know what? I kind of root for these kind of guys because, you know, you see
the guys you had in NFL Europe, aren't they? Those kind of long shots.
They're guys that have hung in there, and for what, you know, like I say, Miles Austin's hamstrings or inconsistent catching or whatever it is, they've never, you know, really been the guy, shown flashes, but never been the guy. And then they get a chance in a situation like Cleveland that was desperate for receivers because of suspensions and all the craziness that's gone on there. And they have a chance to perform in a critical game and make big plays down the stretch to win a football game. And you think about a guy like Brian Hoyer, who, you know, everybody kind of writes him off as, he's just a backup. He's not good enough to win with. Well, you know, anytime you take a team like he did from way backed up against the goal line and drive it down the field against an NFL defense and one of the better defenses, I think, in the NFL, and get a game-winning touch, a game-winning field goal, that's a huge – I mean, that is a step. And I think it's a great step for the organization because you have to win those kinds of games to build the confidence in your football team and in the locker room that – when it, you know, you face that adversity, you face that long field, you face that last-minute drive, and you can say, hey, we've been here before. We know how to do it. And that's the teams that consistently win, that have done it year in, year out, when it gets tough, they just, hey, remember the Saints game?
Yeah.
You know, when we took it from the four to, let's go do that again.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why that's such a critical part of turning a franchise.
Yeah, and they can look to that second half against Pittsburgh in week one and look how well they played there. So they found a little bit of consistency. Jeff, there was a sideline spat between Sean Payton, the head coach of the Saints, and Rob Ryan, the defensive coordinator. So Rob's a friend of yours, so we're going to talk about a buddy of yours in the NFL. And Sean didn't look like he was being, you know, overly encouraging, but Rob didn't say, yes, coach, let's talk about it in the locker room. He gave a little bit back. I mean, there may be some coaches who would bite their tongue there. Rob maybe is not that kind of guy. But I've seen a couple of things on this. One is coaches saying, well, you just wait and see what it's like on the sideline. You should come down and see it and experience it. But then I was listening to Steve Mariucci of the NFL Network, and he said, it is like that. It is intense. But he said, I've never had a coach jaw back at me like that. So, I mean, what was your take on it? It's Rob, right?
You got to understand, you're talking about my buddy now, right? This is almost like a shot below the belt, Neil. But I got mixed emotions. I really do, because I'm there. You know, I'm there every week right now.
Well, take us inside the sidelines. What is it?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. It is incredibly intense, and the decisions that are made so fast, and you know, critical decisions, and the headset, and everybody's on the headset, and everybody's talking, and then the head coach clips on, and it can get crazy. I mean, it can get really crazy. And Rob is a guy that one of his greatest strengths is that he wears his emotions on his sleeve.
Yeah.
Rob is going to be who Rob is, right? And when you hire Rob, you got to understand that's what you're getting. Now, he also is an emotional, fiery guy. That's one of the great things he brings to you when he's on your staff.
As is Sean Payton, isn't he, to be fair?
Exactly, and they're extremely competitive guys. Mm. And I am sure that when these kinds of things happen, and they do happen every week in most games, that once it's said, it's over as soon as it happens. Now, here's what's tougher in pro football is that there are 35 or 40 cameras on that, you know, in the game, on every NFL game. And, you know, sideline, you know, microphones and, you know, the access is so intense now that everything gets caught. And so, you know, any kind of altercation like this or any kind of disagreement like this is immediately captured on film, and then it's dissected a million times and it's run back and forth and everybody's reading their lips and the whole
thing. Well, the thing is, Jeff, because Rob is, as you said, he's exuberant, he's colorful, he's passionate, he's emotional. When those TV producers set up their cameras for the weekend game, they will say, give me a camera on Rob Ryan. They're not saying that in New England. They're not saying, give me a camera on Matt Patricia. You know,
no.
So that's where, you know, that's part of the thing. I mean, I watched it, and I've seen sideline spats before, and I looked at this one, and I actually thought, you know what, two really emotional, possibly quite volatile at times characters, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah. And I truly believe that'll be the case. And I'm sure that, you know, they'll have a little sit-down talk and shut the door and you know, flesh it out. I would not be surprised if, you know, Rob doesn't address it with the team or the head coach addresses it with the team. Because, again, it's out there and everybody knows about it. And you see it happen between players and coaches, you know, where a player will snap back at a coach because – you know, it's a highly emotionally charged environment. If you have never been there, it is so intense on the sideline.
Jeff,
and there's
just
so
that,
much.
Steve
so
Mariucci
much,
said, just on that, I'll stop you. Steve Mariucci said that, you know, in, how in NASCAR or Formula One, you can hear what the drivers are saying on the radio. He said, what do you think it would be like if you could hear what the coaches were saying on the sideline? Would you like that on TV?
Let me just say this, that I've worked for some guys where you wouldn't hear anything except beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, we have one of them on this podcast.
Hey, easy now. But I remember there's an old line coach in the NFL, was a head coach in the NFL, Jim Hanifin.
Yeah.
Hanny would get on the headset, and I swear to God, he could put the F word in the middle of a, you know, in the middle of a word, you know. It was amazing. But that's just, some guys are that way. And then there's other guys that are extremely quiet. Like I was watching Mark on the sideline in the San Francisco game.
Yeah, he's a different deal, isn't he?
Now, you put the camera on him, you won't know what, I mean, you got to understand Mark, and you got to know his body language to understand, because he's got that poker face, and very rarely are you ever even going to see a little bit of emotion out of him, positive or negative. They could score Brandon Marshall's catch, you might get a smile out of him, but you know, most of the game he's going to be very meticulous and very very nonplussed, and he's going to be just even keel. Now, I, you know, having been on the headset with him, he's emotional during a game too. He just doesn't show it in the way that Sean or Rob would show it.
Mm. So we don't expect Rob to nip out for a burger and do a runner, as previously been reported. Jeff, that was a low blow and a curveball, talking about one of your friends, but I'm going to do one more, if you don't mind. Poor old Marty Morningwig, calling that timeout at the time. I mean, that's just bad luck, right?
My guys are taking a hit this week. All my buddies. You know what?
It's just bad luck, right?
It was just like, and then I saw the press conference, and Rex was, you know, obviously Rex was dying, you know, because here you go, you got a chance to really go do something special, go to start at 2-0 and, you know, beat the Packers in Lambeau and all of that stuff, and you're struggling to make plays, and all of a sudden you make a play at the end of the game, and there's a timeout, and you know, and again, the somewhere, you know, how it always is, you know, we'll never know exactly what the truth is in the situation, but it is an unfortunate deal, and you know, again, sideline mechanics, sideline decorum, sideline, you know, I mean,
what is it with the officials, Jeff? They can only take a timeout call from the sideline from the head coach, or because Sheldon Richardson got right in, so the defensive lineman heard Marty Morningwig calling for timeout, and he stepped forward and shouted timeout into the ear of the official. Should it only come from Rex Ryan?
Well, there's usually a protocol with that, and the head coach, because you know those timeouts are so valuable that the head coach really has or should have the final say on whether you take a timeout or not. Now, in that situation where it's, you know, you got time count issues and clock issues
down
and all that other stuff, fourth down and all this stuff, you know, and again, these are the kinds of situations that staffs need to rehearse, you know, so that there is, that everybody knows that if there's a timeout, it has to be taken by the head coach, or does the offensive coordinator have the opportunity in that situation because of the nature of the clock, and you can't get communication, as you know, you can't go through the levels of the chains of command to get something done. I don't know. I don't know what the situation is in New York relative to how their chain of command works, but typically the only guy that takes a timeout is the head coach.
Yeah. Jeff, that's fascinating insight, some of that stuff. So, I mean, we are going to whiz through the week three picks as well, but I think that was good. It's good to have those kind of conversations, and you give us that insight. Just a couple of bulletin board things I want to let people know about. There are still some tickets available for the three International Series games at Wembley Stadium. These are some of the best seats in the house. Of course, all three games were sold out, but the teams have an allocation of tickets themselves. If they can't use all of those, they return them to NFL UK. So there are some tickets available for the games at Wembley Stadium. So go to nfluk.com for details on that. And Jeff, we'll give some congratulations to the London Warriors. They're the national champions after winning at Brit Bowl, and the Merseyside Nighthawks who won the national final as well. So congratulations to those two teams. I never played in a Brit Bowl. I got close a couple of times, so I know it's special for those players to go up there and lift those trophies.
Oh, and you know what? Anytime you win a championship at any level, it's a tremendous accomplishment for everybody in the program. And both of those programs I know, you know, pretty well. Actually, the Warriors, I was there when they were born, you know, and I've watched that organization grow, and all those coaches and players I have a soft spot for. And you know, the Blitz and the Warriors has turned into a tremendous rivalry, and I think that's great for, you know, Brit football. And then the Nighthawks, you know, they've we follow each other on Twitter, and I was pulling for them all through the playoffs, and it was great to see them, you know, win their first championship. And you know, that it's really fun for me. And even though I'm all the way across the ocean over here to on Twitter and follow the teams and all of the university, the uni teams and the amateur teams and all the football that's being played, you know, in England right now, in the UK right now, in Ireland, it's awesome to see how much the game has grown, and you know how passionate the fans are, and you know the things that really some of the neat stuff that teams are doing now to promote the game and promote their, you know, their teams and Freshers Week. I saw some stuff at the Freshers Fair last week on Twitter that was really cool. So, you guys, I just hope they keep that up because it's awesome for the game.
I always enjoy telling players from the NFL that, you know, I used to, and now these guys pay to play the game. And I was standing at the Regent Street event last year talking to Franco Harris. So what a privilege to talk to one of the all-time greats. And he was saying, did you ever play? And I said, I played over here in the UK for 10 years. We used to pay, I don't know, $500 a year to play the game. He was like, don't you dare tell the NFL owners that. They would love that business model. I said, fair enough, Franco.
Yeah, you know what? And that's why I think it's got such a – it's captured my heart, and why when I first came to Europe in the early 90s and saw those kids out there on those unmarked fields with not much equipment and not much coaching and just a love and passion for the game and, you know, wearing their pads on the subway to going to the stadium, you know, going to the practice field or, you know, getting out of their car and changing on the, you know, in their car so that they could practice and just all the things that you think, you know, American kids probably wouldn't do if they had to just to play the game. And, you know, it's phenomenal. And I love the fact that it's grown and it's getting stronger and healthier and more kids are playing and more coaches and more officials and more cheerleaders and more fans and all of it. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Absolutely. Great stuff. So congratulations to all the teams that were at Brit Bowl this past weekend, and the University League starts up soon as well. So lots to look forward to domestically. Let's look ahead to week three then. So in week two, I went 8-8 in the picks. This is the part of the podcast, by the way, if you do, and we don't encourage gambling, but if you do like to look at the NFL predictions and the whole predictions business, stop this podcast right here, because I went 8-8 and I'm now 15-17 on the season. Jeff, you went 6-10 and you are also 15-17 on the season.
I tell you what, that is, I think, a great thing right now. And here's why I say it's a great thing. Because if you're, let's say, Cleveland, right? Mm. If you're a Cleveland fan, you got a chance. You're a Buffalo fan. You're 2-0, right? I mean, you don't know. This is so unbelievably balanced now. Mm. And that any team can rise up. And, you know, Detroit looks like gangbusters the first week, and then they go down and score 7 points in Carolina. Carolina, who had no receivers, you know, 4 months ago, is now 2-0. You know, it's just Dallas, who looked horrible against San Francisco, goes in and plays really well at Tennessee. Mm. And I mean, so it's a, you know, this is a time in the NFL where everybody has a chance every week, and it's tougher and tougher to be able to predict who's going to be able to win, much less point spreads.
Yeah, definitely. Right, we're going to give it a try anyway. So games on Sky Sports this week. Thursday night, we've got Tampa Bay at Atlanta. Sunday, we've got Green Bay at Detroit, followed by Denver at Seattle. So some great games on Sky Sports this weekend and lots of NFL programming, of course, all through the week. I'm going to take Atlanta at home, Jeff, on Thursday night. What about you?
Yeah, I like Atlanta, too. I think that Tampa is struggling a little bit right now. And Atlanta,
can't get that offense going, can they?
Yeah, and you know, they've got issues all over the place on offense. And Atlanta, I think, is a better talented football team right now, and Matt Ryan being the difference maker in that one.
Let's go to Sunday then. San Diego at Buffalo. The Bills are riding an absolute wave at the moment. I mean, all the emotion with Jim Kelly in the stadium last week. You know, they've got new owners coming in and say, we're going to stay in Buffalo. So there's a real feel-good factor about the Bills at the moment. So I'm taking Chargers.
Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting because we're so close to the Bills situation here and watching this thing go. And, you know, Doug's getting his, you know, an awful lot out of that football team. And I think they're a little better on defense than people give them credit for. They've got a pretty good front seven. And, you know, it's just, I just don't know. I'm not sold yet on EJ. I just am not sold yet on EJ. So I think San Diego, you know, riding the positive energy of that Seattle win, will come up here and take care of business.
Tennessee at Cincinnati. Bengals have some offensive weaponry that's going to be missing now, of course, but they did lean on Giovanni Bernard quite heavily last week. I think defense might be the story there with the Bengals, so I'm going Cincinnati.
Yeah, I it's, I hate to say this, but we're 3-for-3 right
we're
now.
We're equally bad, yeah. The old Browns against the new Browns, so Baltimore at Cleveland. I think I'm going to – I liked what I saw from Baltimore last week. What about you, Jeff? I thought that was a good bounce-back game for them.
Yeah, and I think defensively that'll be the key in this one. You know, I think that Baltimore has a better defense. I think Cleveland, you know, played real well. And, you know, obviously positive emotion after coming out of that win against the Saints. But I just think Baltimore's a better football team top to bottom.
Yeah, I'm going Baltimore as well. Green Bay at Detroit is our first game. This could be an offensive shootout. And it looks like with the Packers so far, so, you know, it's only been 2 weeks, but they are going to have to win their share of shootouts. We were hoping to see defensive improvement. I certainly was. I picked them to win the Super Bowl. that's not emerged at the moment. But I think they can. I think they can go to Green Bay and go to Detroit and move the football. So I'm going Packers.
Well, I'm gonna. This is one I'm gonna jump on the other side of the fence on you, Neil. The thing, as you say, is whether the Packers are gonna be good enough on defense. And I think that you know, the Lions at home, you know, that's the edge to me in the dome. You know, and I think that it'll be a high-scoring game. I think the game will be in the 30s, but I think the Lions are going to win it.
All right, you're going Detroit there. Indianapolis at Jacksonville. This is a couple of winless teams. I've got to go Indianapolis. I think they've been close last night. They were close, relatively close in week one. I think Jags have still got quite a few problems, so I'm going Indianapolis.
Yeah, I agree, Indianapolis. And, you know, I saw some good things out of Indianapolis last night. And, you know, for a guy that's just been beaten up and beaten down in the media, you know, it was good to see Trent Richardson do a couple good things last night, had a couple 10-yard runs, and you know, I think that's positive.
The Wembley games are rolling around quickly. This time next week, the Oakland Raiders will be in London. Before that, they travel to face the New England Patriots. Raiders are in trouble, Jeff. James Jones' double fumble kind of summed up what kind of season they're having so far. I've got to go Patriots.
Yep, and you know, geez, Al. I mean, when you've got a veteran player, a guy that's been around, and he comes out publicly and says we suck, that's tough. Yeah. That's tough, and yeah. I think there's a, you know, a lot of pressure now starting to be focused on Dennis Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. Hot seat is warming up. Minnesota at New Orleans. I've got a question in the mailbag about Matt Cassel, so we'll save that for a second. But I think the Saints, well, they're a very, very strong team. They didn't lose at home last year, so I'm going Saints.
Wow. you know, again, this is hard for me to say because he's my buddy.
Yeah.
But right now, you look at that defense and they are in with the Saints, and they are underachieving and giving up, you know, too many points. And if they, you know, I think they have to play better on defense. And, you know, frankly, I think they will. I've watched Rob in the past when he's been put in these kinds of tough situations and the focus gets put on him, and he's always able to rally his troops up. And I think this will, I agree with you, I think they'll win this week.
Okay, we're both going Saints. J.J. Watt is at the New York Giants. What's he like now? He's catching passes for touchdowns.
I think they're going to get the $30 million out of him. Yeah. They got him playing offense.
I think
now.
I worked out the other day. He's got to force a fumble. He's got to run one from line of scrimmage, return a kick, and kick an extra point. Then he's got the full, literally every statistic you can possibly record in a season.
Well, you know what? What a phenomenal guy. You know what a talented, super competitive guy, and I'm always going to be on. Yeah. I'm always going to be on his team. I mean, on his side, rather.
I'm going Houston because I do think the Giants are in the doldrums. Little signs of life here and there, but they're too careless with the football. And it's not just Eli Manning. Rashard Jennings caught a pass out of the backfield last week, tried to get up off the floor, and fumbled with no one within 5 yards of him. So I think Houston's defense can create enough turnovers to win this one.
You know, Tom came out this week and said he still really likes his football team, but he's got to show me what he likes about it, because right now, I don't see a lot of positives for the Giants. And, you know, O'Brien has done quietly, very quietly, a real good job, because coming out of preseason, you know, there were a lot of questions about Houston, and, you know, they're playing pretty good football right now.
So you're going Houston?
Yep.
Okay. The Washington Redskins at Philadelphia Eagles, I think Kirk Cousins is a good fit for that offense. But I think Philadelphia, although I don't think they would think they've got perfect performances out of Nick Foles so far in two games, they have so many options offensively. I'm going Eagles.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Eagles are a better football team top to bottom. And, you know, I think that the fact of the matter is, even though Cousins played real well, there's still some issues, you know, in Washington.
Dallas at St. Louis. The Rams are going to go back to Sean Hill at quarterback, and it looks like Dallas are going to ride DeMarco Murray until he breaks down.
This is going to be an interesting game. I really think that the Rams have a chance in this game.
Okay.
I'm not sold on the Dallas defense yet. And again, talk about a guy that can do a great job to, you know, stopping the run. You know, Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams, they'll put together a game plan that if you're one-dimensional, they'll get after you. So I think this is going to be a heck of a game, but I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, and St. Louis wins.
You're going St. Louis. I'm going Dallas. San Francisco at Arizona. We're not quite sure on the status of Carson Palmer at the moment. 49ers, ton of turnovers and penalties in the second half. Should have won that game against Chicago. I'm going to take the 49ers to win on the road here, Jeff.
Yeah, I think they'll bounce back, especially, you know, the caveat with all of this is what's Carson Palmer's health.
Yeah.
You know, if he's out, then I'd say San Francisco. But, you know, I just think a Jim Harbaugh coach football team is going to look at this second half and recognize what they let slip out of their fingers, and they'll come back with a vengeance.
So moving on to the Miami Dolphins at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs are banged up. Alex Smith showed me something again, Jeff, which I think they were right to give him the contract extension. In the offseason, they hung around in that game against the Denver Broncos. I think they could have added some more points. Cairo Santos, I don't trust him at kicker at all. Niall Davis looked good. So there were some things there for the Chiefs to be positive about, but I do think Miami are a better team at home, so I'm going Dolphins.
Yeah, tough place to play. It's going to be, you know, how it is right now in Miami. Yeah. It's 90 degrees and 90% humidity, and you come out of the Midwest, and you got to go down there and play. So, again, I think the home field advantage and the heat, you know, Miami wins.
Denver at Seattle. Oh, this is a mouthwatering one. I mean, it's not going to be 43-8. I'll say that. I think Seattle wins because Seattle at home are a much different proposition than Seattle on the road, and I don't think San Diego necessarily uncovered a blueprint for success that everyone's going to copy and knock off the Seahawks week after week. But Denver are a proud team. They've got two big additions on defense in DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib. That might make a difference, but I think it would just be a closer game, but Seattle still wins.
Well, you know, as great a job as Pete does getting his team focused and prepared, then, you know, those players, they look at the schedule, right? And they win the first one, and then they've beaten San Diego. They know that it's yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
But they see who's looming in week three. And it's really, really difficult to keep that focus off of you know, Denver and say we're going to go into San Diego on the road. And, you know, I don't think that they were as well not prepared is not the right word, but I don't think they were as focused in San Diego as they'll be certainly against Denver. And I think this will be a game that it'll be a bloodbath. I think it's going to be a physical football game. And I look for Seattle to bounce back.
All right, so we're both going Seahawks. The Sunday night game is Pittsburgh at Carolina. We can stop writing off the Panthers, can't we? I mean, we were all queuing up. I certainly was there jostling for position at the front of the line in the offseason. Oh, your offensive line's a mess. You've lost all your receivers. Well, still got one heck of a defense, and they find ways to get wins. You know, I mean, this Detroit team is not without its offensive weaponry. And the Panthers, they shut them down. I mean, they didn't shut them out, but they shut them down. So I'm going Carolina to beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about just Ron Rivera for a second. Here's a guy that nobody ever talks about. He's got deficiencies at receiver. He's got deficiencies in supposedly in the offensive line. He's got deficiencies in the secondary. He loses his quarterback the first week of the season, and they sit here at 2-0, and nobody talks about him. Nobody talks about what a job they've done. And you know what? Dave Gettleman, give him some props for, you know, doing some things that were not popular in the off season and believing in what, you know, believing in what he felt he had to do. And, you know, early results say all good moves. And now, you know, if they can go to 3-0, which I think they will, then, you know, again, you got to look at this team and say, hey, great job by the front office, great job by the coaching staff, and certainly my son has been on my butt for the last 2 weeks.
So you've got to pick the Panthers, right?
I have to pick the Panthers because I've gone against them the last 2 weeks, and he's been rubbing my nose in it as soon as I get texts as soon as the score. It's like score alert, my text. Every time the Panthers score a touchdown, I'm on the sideline, and my phone's ringing, and it's my son. Hey, Dad, the Panthers just scored again.
Son, stop it. I'm trying to call a play. Final game of week three is the Chicago Bears at the New York Jets. The way the Jets played in Lambeau Field, I'm gonna pick them to win at home against Chicago. I mean, I thought the Bears showed great courage and determination to come back on the road in San Francisco, but they're still not right in my mind. And I think the Jets will see the Bears loaded up the box, didn't they, and dared Kaepernick to beat them with a pass, and he couldn't do it. I think they'll probably try the same again, but I don't know if they can stop the Jets' running game, so I'm going Jets.
Well, I think that'll be the key, but again, I just really think that the Bears have so many weapons. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so many weapons, and you know, how do you handle all that stuff? And I know Rex will have a great plan, and they'll blitz him and give him a million different junk looks and put pressure on Cutler. But I just really think the Bears are a better football team, and I think, you know, again, this is a big game for the Bears because the Bears need this on the road and, you know, get to 2-1. So I think it's a big game for both teams, frankly, but I think the Bears will go into New York and win.
All right, so you're going to Chicago there. Let's get into the mailbag. A couple of quick questions just to wrap us up. Jamie Coleman had asked about can the Panthers top their division this year. We kind of just talked about the Panthers there. Jamie, I think we like what we see early on. Gareth Phillips says, when will we see Teddy Bridgewater? Surely 4 interceptions from Matt Castle last week is enough. This is going to be a tricky time for Matt Castle, Jeff, isn't it? Because Bridgewater had a good off-season, a good training camp, and now Matt Castle, if he is on a bit of a hot seat, he's heading into New Orleans where it isn't easy to win, even if Rob and that defense are having problems.
No, it isn't, because one of the things they're going to face in New Orleans, you know, there's a lot of issues when you go to New Orleans. It's even though you're indoors, it's humid, and that. If you've ever been in the Superdome, and it is amazingly, I mean, the air is almost like dead, and it's so loud in there. And when those fans get, you know, New Orleans is a party town, and when the Saints are in town, the party starts about Thursday. And so there will be more than a few hurricanes drunk on Crescent Street when they, you know, come into this thing, and they will be loud, and they will make it very, very difficult for them to hear the signals. It'll be very, very difficult for them to do audibles. All of that stuff factors into this. And, you know, the offense in Minnesota is a little fragile right now. So I think that this is a tough one. This is not the place, frankly, for me, that I'd put Teddy Bridgewater into his first experience.
No,
right?
No,
and that's just too tough an environment and too tough. Again, Rob will have a bunch of junk looks. He'll have a bunch of things that they haven't seen before, blitzes from all over the place. Not the kind of environment you want a rookie quarterback, particularly a guy that you want to be your future, to get his feet wet in. I would say wait a little bit yet and try and limp through this thing with Matt Castle until you can get Bridgewater at home and against a team that will give him cleaner looks.
Just if you've never had a hurricane, I remember my first Super Bowl I ever went to, the Rams-Patriots one. I had about three hurricanes on Bourbon Street with my old editor from First Down, Keith Webster. I woke up the next morning, went to the bathroom. I thought I had internal bleeding. It's like a bright red cocktail, isn't it? Too much information.
You aren't the first guy that's been to New Orleans and thought there was something wrong with him the next day.
Yeah. One more question, Jeff, and I guess it's just a quick one. But Dean Woods says, could J.J. Watt end the run of offensive players winning league MVP this year? We've talked about J.J. Watt, so we don't need to talk about that. But we do draw our attention to the quarterbacks. It's going to be hard to break that quarterback monopoly, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And here's why it's so doggone difficult, is because if you're one single player on defense, it's, there's so many things that the coaches can do to make it tough on you to be productive enough to win an award like that. For example, you're playing right end. They run the ball to the left. They run away from you. They're not going to run to you. They double you in pass protection, right? If you're the quarterback, the ball's in your hand all the time. And so you have an opportunity to make plays. And, you're so much a focus. When you look at a team and you look at a great player on defense, one of the things you want to do is you want to, eliminate him. We use the term, we want to make him unemployed, right? We don't want to, just like if the guy's a great left tackle, well, that's a matchup you give to the offense, right? But you want that guy blocking air as much as you possibly can, not blocking your best pass rusher. So in the matchup game and in the scheme game, it's easier to eliminate a great defensive player than it is a great quarterback. So it's tougher for a defensive player to have the kind of numbers and any kind of impact to win an MVP award. Now, he's having that kind of season. The issue is, can he sustain it over the next 14 weeks?
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and all of the stuff from around the NFL on the Inside the Huddle podcast. Jeff, great insight today. Just so you know, you've been the J.J. Watt of this podcast today. Fantastic.
I got blood running down my nose right now.
Exactly,
I just headbutted the wall. So.
Have a great week, my friend.
All right, you too. Take
All right,
care.
That's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We want you to enjoy those week 3 games. And we'll be back to chat about it all next week. Bye for now.